Hi, Jonathan. Thank you very much. Okay, picture this. A gigantic circular building, hundreds of performers and thousands of people in the audience, music that is so loud it vibrates through your body, and a spectacle that captures the heart of a nation. I'm not talking about the opening ceremony of the 2012 Olympics. I'm talking about the Grande Messe des Morts by the Danny Boyle of his day, Hector Berlioz. I don't think we're going to see any belching chimneys emerging from the arena of the Albert Hall tonight, or swing dancing nurses, and I'm also pretty sure the Queen isn't going to parachute in halfway through. But what we're going to hear is as earth-shatteringly ambitious for its time as what we saw 2 weeks ago in Stratford. And it was just as astonishing to those who heard it first in December 1837 in the huge chapel of Les Invalides in Paris. After the first performance, Berlioz wrote that at least 90 out of every 100 people talking about it thought it was the best thing they'd ever heard by him. Well, the most obviously astonishing thing about Berlioz's Requiem is the sheer volume of performers involved. The BBC National Orchestra of Wales is streaming on stage now, and they have swollen to about 150 players. Lined up along the back of the orchestra are more timpani than I have ever seen in one place at one time. There are 16 of them in a row, 10 people to play them, and also 9 percussionists behind them. We have 4 brass bands made up of 12 horns, 12 trumpets, 4 cornets, 16 trombones, 6 tubas, 8 bassoons. You get the picture. The forces are absolutely enormous. And then above them, 470 voices. They're practically spilling out of the choir stalls here at the Royal Albert Hall. They're made up of the BBC National Chorus of Wales, the Huddersfield Choral Society, and London Symphony Chorus. And then we're also going to have a single soloist walking out just in front of the organ, that is the tenor Toby Spence, to sing in the Sanctus. Well, it's Thierry Fisher's last concert as principal conductor of the BBC National Orchestra of Wales. He is absolutely passionate about Berlioz. He said to me earlier, he doesn't just like programming Berlioz, he has a real need to. We spoke before the rehearsal today, and I asked him, given Berlioz's propensity for enormous spectacles like the one we're about to see, does he think Berlioz was just a little bit mad?
He was absolutely not mad and not crazy. He was an amazing, inspiring artist in all terms of any possible creativity you can imagine.
And the Grande Messe des Morts, why that piece?
I have a strong attraction for this piece for many reasons. One of the reasons is that it's objectively describing the immensity of God. Berlioz was not a strong believer, but he felt a desperate need to believe and adore something bigger than his human spirit or the human spirit in general.
So tell us about the extremes, because it's not just a mad, loud, powerful work of brass cacophony. There's more to it.
Yeah, it's not only about being loud or soft. It's about how to create doubts, questions. That's the purpose. And he needs to push both the performers and the audience to these unknown territories. And he uses what he has, which is these powerful extremes. On top of this, and it's another very specific thing in this Requiem, he is using the notion and the time of the silence like I've almost never seen in any other piece. The introduction of the piece, it starts from nowhere and then immediately 6 beats, totally in silence. And the use of the silence is crucial to go to the next phrase, and the silences are repeated constantly with exactly the same length. And for example, I decided on purpose to do this introduction with absolutely no vibrato. Like, it starts from nowhere, like, you know, who am I? Am I really going to write a requiem? Silence. And just the bar before the chorus is singing the first word, which is requiem, this D minor chord, I put vibrato for the very first time in the piece, just to give the human part of his desire, his desperate need to believe in something. As a conductor, how I move or don't move during the silences is the most important thing, and it's the most difficult thing than any complex score you can imagine, because I feel completely taken by these silences with this immensity in front of me, and it pushes you to humility.
Tonight's conductor, Thierry Fisher. Here he is live at the BBC Proms to bring sound out of silence in that monumental masterpiece by Hector Berlioz, his Requiem, The Grand Messe des Morts. when Hector Berlioz called his Requiem the Grande Messe des Morts, the big mass of the dead, he definitely wasn't kidding. More than 600 people on stage at the Royal Albert Hall, live here on BBC Radio 3, conducted by Thierry Fischer in Berlioz's extraordinary, earth-shattering work, not just in its amazing loud passages with four brass groups surrounding the orchestra, but also in those moments of exquisite silence held so perfectly there by Thierry Fischer. Thierry Fischer in this, his final concert with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales as their principal conductor. They're led tonight by Leslie Hatfield. And he returns on stage with the three chorus masters, Adrian Partington, chorus master of the BBC National Chorus of Wales, Joseph Cullen, chorus master of the Huddersfield Choral Society, Matthew Hamilton, chorus master of the London Symphony Chorus. In his memoirs, Berlioz tells a lovely story about the very first performance of that. The conductor, just at the beginning of the Tuba Mirum, that extraordinarily loud movement, leant down and pulled out his snuff box and started taking snuff. And Berlioz was at the ready. He jumped forward and beat time. Well, that's Berlioz's version of events anyway. And so Thierry Fischer returns to the stage with the tenor Toby Spence before him to take his applause. He was here just two nights ago, Thursday night, singing in the late night Ivor Novello celebrations with Simon Callow, the soprano Sophie Bevan, the Halle and Sir Mark Elder, which if you missed was absolutely joyous. Do catch up with it online through the Radio 3 website. BBC National Orchestra of Wales gets a holiday now. They're off for 3 weeks, although they'll be back for Proms in the Park in Caerphilly. The BBC National Chorus of Wales get slightly less of a holiday. They come back on the 25th of August here to the Proms at the Royal Albert Hall to sing in Debussy's Martyrdom of Saint Sebastian. As the applause continues here at the Royal Albert Hall and a big whoop there for Thierry Fischer, I'll hand you back for the rest of the music tonight on Radio 3 to Broadcasting House and to Jonathan Swain.
Sarah, thank you very much. Sarah Moorpeach there at the Royal Albert Hall. And as well as the iPlayer online, there's another chance to hear tonight's prom broadcast here on Radio 3 this Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Well, we're back live at the Royal Albert Hall for our next prom tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. It's a programme of woodwind and brass music. Vaughan Williams, Holst and Walton, played by the National Youth Wind Orchestra of Great Britain, and Gavin Bryars, George Benjamin and Derek Bourgeois, played by the National Youth Brass Band of Great Britain. That's tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. As for later in the week,
on Radio 3 from the BBC Proms, the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra perform music from North and South America. Fanfare for the Common Man, the New World Symphony, and a boisterous fantasy by Villa-Lobos with Brazilian pianist Nelson Freire. Wednesday night at the BBC Proms on Radio 3 from 7:30.
Well, tomorrow night at the Hall, more massed voices for a rare performance of Schoenberg's medieval love tragedy, Guralida. Jukka-Pekka Saraste conducts the BBC Symphony Orchestra and a choir of some 300 voices. The solo singers, including tenor Simon O'Neill, as the cursed King Valdemar, with soprano Angela Denoke making her proms debut. That's live from the Royal Albert Hall tomorrow night here on BBC Radio 3 at 8 p.m. As for the rest of this evening here on Radio 3, well, in just under 5 minutes, Drama on 3, Marathon Tales, interweaves stories about marathons and runners throughout the ages. Greek runner Pheidippides finds himself racing alongside long-distance athletes from mythology and from more recent times too, and they all have powerful stories to tell. Marathon Tales is our Drama on 3 at 9:15 tonight. And then at 10:45 tonight, our contemporary music programme Here and Now travels to Iceland for new Icelandic music performed at Iceland's Dark Music Days Festival. For the moment, though, we're with Gura Leader in mind tomorrow night. This is early Schoenberg, Schoenberg's Die verlorenen Haufen, The Lost Brigade, a tale of a doomed brigade that recalls Waldemar's ghostly soldiers in Gura Leader. The singer is Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and the pianist Aribert Reimann. A new, fresh morning begins, and they're collecting our corpses. That was Schoenberg's Die verlorene Haufen, The Lost Brigade. The singer was Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau and the pianist Aribert Reimann. As I say, tomorrow night at the Royal Albert Hall, a Proms performance of Schoenberg's Gurrelieder. That's tomorrow night here on Radio 3 at 8 p.m. Well, back to this evening. It's just gone 9:15 and now drama on 3. In 490 BC, the city-state of Athens was under attack from a huge Persian invading force. From the battlefield of Marathon, they sent a solitary runner, Pheidippides, 140 miles to ask the neighbouring Spartans for help. They said they would assist, but not immediately. Pheidippides ran the 140 miles back, rejoined his comrades, and after fierce fighting, ran the 26 miles to Athens to warn them that the Persians were approaching by sea. The marathon race was devised for the first modern Olympics in 1896 in honour of Pheidippides. And on the eve of the London 2012 Men's Marathon, our drama finds him racing with some more recent athletic heroes and heroines. So here is Marathon Tales by Colin Teven and Hannah Silver.
Pounce, whack, push, slam, thud, speed, pain, guts, sweat, blood, choke, stitch, got to run,
got to run. Fly, scheme, dance.
I run and I run.
And I run. I have found my feet. I have found my soul. My soul is found in the soles of my feet. A joke made in English. One time I could hardly speak one word of this language. So embarrassing. The reporters asking questions and I with nothing to say. I lose my soul when I have no feet to run with. I lose my heart when I have no words to speak. I realize we are not so strong. It is easy to lose ourselves. We are fragile. We must run together now. We run and we run and we run.
I never liked the desert. Give me springy grass any day. England. Coombs Moss and Axe Edge Moor. Dark, blue, black, heavy. And even when getting my legs moving through mud were hard, I kept at it. My guts were killing me, destroyed by the demon kicking and thrashing inside. But that same demon kept me going. I run.
I run.
And I run.
And I run.
And I run.
I see men ahead, a big ox man with wide shoulders, pounding the ground like it hurt him in a previous life, more like a boxer than a runner. And a skinny birdman next to him, feet skimming the grey sand. Now that fellow looks like a runner, skinny with light, thin bones, long, thin, muscled limbs, small calves, narrow hips. I can remember how it feels to be running so easy, so free. It's a strange place, this land we run in. Very strange indeed. Who is it we're looking for? There's something we must do here. A task. A message that must arrive in time. We run, and we run, and we run.
Run, Herald. Run.
Herald? But sir, they outnumber us 10-1 as is. I want to stay and fight.
You are a Herald. You must carry the message.
But I want to defend my home. My wife, my daughter, just like my brothers and my comrades in arms. Like every other man in the city, I want to do my duty.
Your duty is to run, boy.
The mountains are lonely at night. The stars make cold company. And the air grows thinner, my head is light. The leather on these sandals ripped and torn. Call yourself a shoemaker, Adidas? How am I expected to run in these? My poor feet, toughened like worked oak. The chafing leather is even worse than rough Arcadian rocks. Can't stop. Untie them as you run, Pheidippides. I curse these feet. Had they been less swift, I wouldn't be here. In the barbarian outback of the Peloponnese, running day and night so I might beg upon bended knee those slavish Spartans to come help us, Athens the free. At least I might see some action when I sail back to Marathon with them. Bare feet, no matter. Shorten the stride, scale the heights. Ignore the light head, make light the feet instead. Concentrate. Run like your beautiful girl runs. Free and loose and light. What was that? Can't stop in these parts or a lonely shepherd might mistake you for a sheep. It's nothing, Phidippides. You must be hallucinating. The other heralds talk of it, as though part of you has died and you've passed through a doorway to the other side. Who's there? Just an echo. And that's just a bear or a mountain lion, Phidippides.
Stop, I say. Phidippides, stop.
How do you know? How did you catch up with me so fast? And what's with the reed pipes? And your legs, like those of a goat? I know we make jokes about you country folk, but what bestial interbreeding gave rise to this, eh?
My father was Hermes, I'll have you know. The fleet-foot messenger of the gods.
So the goat legs run on your mother's side?
Let me tell you, Phidippides, these two cloven-footed friends are better than your tinder sticks for chasing nymphs up craggy mountainsides.
You're Pan?
Pan, that's who I am. And you're not as fast as you'd like to think you are.
The god of everything.
If only common misconception, as your inability to recognize me demonstrates, I am a god that is little understood in your so-called civilized world. No, my name does not derive from Pan, meaning all, but Paion, guardian of the flocks, the shepherd god.
I'm sorry. I'm confused, dizzy. The air is so thin as though I'd run up Mount Olympus itself. Is that where I am?
I believe you heralds call this place the other side. I like to think of it as a place of panic. Something else I've given my name to because of the panic I can instill in whole armies of men in battle.
Oh, shit. The Persians are coming. I must get to Sparta. I must...
See? You're panicking. Phidippides. A name nearly made for hexameter. Another name we might call this place in which you find yourself is Eternity.
I don't understand.
We have passed through the doorway into this strange land. Here, we run with the greats.
Like your father Hermes?
Maybe.
And bare-breasted Atalanta?
You might see her, depending what skin she's in.
I've always thought I might be the one to catch her.
Dream on, Herald. But it's not only the greats of old, but the greats who are to come you'll find in this eternal place. And it is these ghosts of the future and the past running with you on the other side who can help you save your city.
But what do I need help for? I'm fine. Once I'm over this mountain, I'm as good as there.
Your race has only just begun.
Just begun?
I'm offering to help save your city to spread my panic right through the Persian ranks.
Why would you help us? The people of Athena's city.
Because you will build a temple to me, Pan, guardian of the flocks, the shepherd god, in the heart of your civilized city. We have a deal, yes?
I guess.
Laters, messenger boy.
Herald, I'm a... Hey, where have you gone? What did he mean, just begun? Oh, Athena, why did I ever first run?
The sky is deep orange. Perhaps it isn't a sky at all, but the ocean for another land above us. Run, Abibe, run. I am hallucinating. Or perhaps I have reached the horizon I have always been running towards. I see a man running ahead. Perhaps he knows where we are.
Who's this dusty little man keeping pace with me? Athena's herald.
Good day, sir. I am Abibe Bikila, private guard to His Imperial Majesty, son of Bikila.
And I am Phidippides, the herald, son of Eucles.
I am not in Ethiopia now. That is certain.
We are family, Abibe, son of Bikila, as we are heralds.
It's very nice to meet you, Herald Phidippides Eucles.
Join me. If you can keep up.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
What extraordinary manners you have. I am a herald. Call me Phidippides.
Thank you very much, Herald Phidippides, for your kindness. If I may say so, you appear familiar to me. Perhaps you have been to my country, Ethiopia.
Nah, but I've heard tell of the Ethiopes. My friend Herodotus went there. So he says, he's full of tall tales.
Now I remember. I heard your name in Rome. I heard your story for the very first time, and I was worried that I too might die as I crossed the finish line.
Die? What are you talking about? I'll be a spar before nightfall.
I'm sorry. I didn't. Or perhaps I did die too.
Look at us, my herald friend. Two men at their peak, racing across the dry plains. Breath, heart and footfall beating their like time on Mother Earth.
No, I don't believe I died. I believe I won.
It was 1960, my first time out of Ethiopia. I ran the marathon at the Rome Olympics. The marathon was begun late in the day, so that we would avoid the heat of Rome. Spectators gathered, reporters were all around us. My Swedish coach, Major Niskanen, was a little further along. He had a plan to see me run as much of the race as possible. We knew the route well, we drove it the day before. So, there I stood on the starting line, wearing my green t-shirt with the number 11 on it, and my red shorts. The other athletes were impatient. It was getting late, but I was calm. Major Niskanen said I would be fine. I wasn't going to die at the end. After all, I'd run many times in Ethiopia. Nothing bad had happened, so even though this was Rome and it was different, I wasn't worried. I felt lucky to be there with all those famous athletes from Europe and America.
Look, they couldn't afford to buy him any shoes.
How embarrassing.
His toes are huge.
He's from Ethiopia.
Where's that?
Below France, next to Morocco.
Morocco is in Africa.
It is.
So is Ethiopia.
I knew that.
And then, even though it was chaotic and we weren't ready, the starting pistol rang out and my feet began their work.
Look, there against the setting sun.
God, don't creep up on me like that, Pan.
The dark walls of Lacedaemonian Sparta.
Like I said, there before nightfall. Good night's rest, and by morning, I'll be setting sail to join my comrades at Marathon. Oh, what was that?
The gods are out hunting early tonight.
Oh, I can't stand lions. So lumbering and ugly.
That's no normal lion, Pidipidis. Look closely.
Atalanta? Is that you? Atalanta, I know you're here. Running always a few paces ahead. The greatest runner of all, princess and goddess in beauty, if not by birth. How did this transformation come about? What was your crime, Atalanta? I'm not like the other men who chased you. I do not hope to win your hand.
That's what they all say. You not come for my hand, Terald?
No, I have a wife and beautiful daughter back in the city.
Lucky them.
I only hope to know your story and to deliver my message.
Story? I have no story. Men are always looking for stories, explanations. Sometimes there are none.
The story of your run.
Oh, that one. But I'm not telling it to you in front of the horny goat god.
Cheeky nymph.
A nymph perhaps once, but never yours.
One of the few that got away.
And don't think you can woo me with those old pipes. I know where they came from. Oh, what are you going to do? Turn me into a goat?
I'm going somewhere. I'm appreciating. Ciao,
ciao,
losers.
Oh, I hope he's not offended.
That's an overrated fear, Harold. Listen.
I started killing men from a young age and found I had a taste for it, and not a little skill. Suckled by a she-bear, it wasn't in my nature to be raped. To spend half my year counting pomegranate seeds was not my fate. So, when the boar hunters, distracted by my beauty, dared to hunt me, I slaughtered them. If I could give one gift to women, this is what it would be. The animal strength required to kill rapists. You see, Apollo had warned me. Atalanta, your beauty tempts men, and you must use your strength to avoid them. Marriage is not your natural state, yet fate brings you a mate, and with him you are destined to live, scream and run in a skin that is not your own. So when I saw the youth Hippomenes gazing at my thighs and breasts with eyes and mouth so clearly wanting to claim them as his prize, I was suddenly flooded by a burning desire. But was it the desire for him or for to kill him? How is a girl to tell one from the other? And if it really was desire for him, what should I do? We were standing at the start of a race I had designed in order to eliminate my suitors. In their arrogance, they'd volunteer to run against me. I'd win, and they'd die. No one could outrun me, but if they did, I was their prize. This race would deliver Hippomenes certain death, or if he lived, a curse would bind him to me in some marriage of otherness. Death or marriage, what would be worse? I didn't know. And already the stands were full of laughter as my followers awaited another spectacle of blood and sweat and slaughter. So I dropped my robe, tied the ribbons to my ankles, wrists and neck, loosened my hair and challenged. Do you want to die? Perhaps he did, the way he looked at me as if already falling into some abyss. Don't make a fool of yourself, Hippomenes. But it was too late.
Standing beside me on the starting line, Atalanta is out of this world, sexy. But this is plain stupidity. I am a fool, an utter moron. I've just volunteered to be whacked. Oh, look at her. With her milky skin and curvy buttocks, her robe fallen around her ankles, rounded breasts with perfect nipples. Just asking for a hand to cup them and a tongue's twizzle, oh God. I'm losing it again. Hey, that's an idea.
Aphrodite, goddess of love, muse of this temptress. I know you can hear me. Take pity. Don't you like men? I can't win without some seriously divine inspiration. My knees are mashed, my back is...
Whoa. Whoa! What the hell? My balls suddenly weigh a ton. I've got three extra ones and they're made of solid gold. Aphrodite's heard my plea and disfigured me. Aphrodite!
Sweetheart! Goddess, thanks for listening and don't get me wrong, I like them. Yeah, they're lush. But how are three extra balls gonna save my butt?
At least you can't say I don't have any. By the gods, we're off.
Come on, Abibi, you show them.
How's your boy doing?
Flying down Cristoforo Colombo. Wilma, congratulations on your medals.
Oh, thanks.
They must be very proud of you at home. That's right, Abibi. Keep it easy.
They want to hold a parade for me at Clarksville. I'm going to tell them I won't attend unless it's integrated. Just for one day. Wilma Rudolph Day. That'll be something. Then, next day, it'll all be back to normal, I guess.
Dear Minkila, beautiful.
He's doing good, huh?
He's running easy, like I told him. Past the Palazzo dello Sport, past Mussolini's grand state buildings. Here, take the binoculars.
He run funny. They all run like that in Ethiopia?
Who's that? Damn. That's Radia ahead of him, in number 185. I told him Radia was number 26. He's confused. Radia must have changed it at the last minute.
Ethiopia. I'd love to see it. Black and white folks live there side by side, don't they?
But he's running well, just like I told him. 15 kilometers in 48 minutes. He's going to beat Satopek's record like this. I told them he would.
I told them he would.
Abisha, Ethiopia. Alabisha, sha-sha-sha. Fly, skim, light, dust, dusk into dark. Moving on. Running and running and...
The black and the white of the Roman city changes to green slopes. And pink flowers line the road, sweet in the heat. The buildings are behind me, and all the big streets. Now I am in the Italian countryside. Except it's dark, so I can't see much. But running is easy. My breath is all I need. I'm a child running through the fields. I'm not running for a reason. There is no finish line. Just living. Just breathing. I run, and I run, and I run. I am running as I was born to run. I am a heartbeat, and breath, and bare feet. Claiming the land and giving it away again at the next step. The air is thick. I must float through it like dusk, falling without anyone noticing. The other runners, white and thick-legged, I run beyond them. There is nothing they can do. This is the natural order of things. I am faster. Now I am chasing number 185. We turn together towards the city. We run past cypress trees as if connected, and the dusk envelops us both. But where is Radi, number 26?
Abibi and Radin turn off the ring road. Now they run along Appian Tika, the old Appian way, the queen of the Roman roads. Why doesn't he accelerate?
My stomach has cramped.
Abibi?
Breathe, Abibi. Breathe. Make it easy.
Breathe, Abibi, breathe. Why do these Africans refuse to drink?
I snatch a plastic cup from a stand at the side. It interrupts my rhythm, but the water is warm and magic. My stomach is untied. I've been climbing a hill. Time to make my move. Speed on the way down. Let gravity take me. I am a child before school, letting my legs loose on the slopes. I look back for a moment. See his brown face. He must be ready. He must be. Run now, Abibi, run! The other half of the moon has been swallowed by the night. Torches line the road. Clouds of fire. Faces in the shadow. Black eyes watching. The ground turns to cobblestones. Soldiers holding flames. Radi still behind, still fighting. A van in front bursts a light into my face. Blinded. Run, Abibi. Just run. Yellow gleams in the dark. A scooter, it swerves. Too close. I falter. Radi has caught up. We run past a huge dark shadow.
Aksum Obelisk, the 4th century monument looted by Mussolini's army from Ethiopia in 1937. Abibi doesn't know the history he runs with, what winning will mean to his country. And he is winning. He is winning!
The weight of the darkness behind pushes me on. Black cobbles, black eyes, bursts of fire. Radi can't fight anymore. The road widens. Run, Abibi, just run! Into an explosion of light. This is Constantine's Arch. The crowd howls. I've won. I can't stop running. My feet. Ambulance men coming. Stop, Abibi, stop! Give thanks. And I gave thanks. I gave thanks to my country, to my feet for carrying me along the streets of this Olympic race in Rome. I kept running under the arch. My feet wouldn't stop. I touched my toes 3 times. I threw out my palm to the air, to the night. I heard Major Niskanen. Abibi! Over here! Abibi! He called me. And then I was in his arms. He embraced me as if I were his own son. I said to him, 26 miles is nothing to me.
Halt, Athenian!
I did it. Athens to Sparta. 30 hours and barely a piss break. 150 miles is nothing to me.
Halt, I said.
Look at my tunic, Spartan. Can't you tell a herald from a hoplite? Take me to your leaders, as they say.
Don't you know what day it is?
Oh, it must have slipped my mind, what with the million or so Persians heading towards the plain of Marathon. I have an urgent message from the generals for your leaders.
I'll go deliver it, but don't say I didn't warn you, messenger boy.
26 miles? It's not humanly possible. I will not create a spectacle of the torture of good men. It would be inhumane. This is 1908, London. the centre of the civilised world, not ancient Rome.
But Her Highness, Princess Mary...
I don't care if the king himself ordered it. The marathon is 25 miles. The distance Pheidippides ran to deliver news from Marathon to Athens. The same distance Spyridon Louise ran in 1896 in the first Olympic marathon. A marathon is 25 miles, and there is no changing it.
With the greatest respect, you don't have any say in the matter. The princess has demanded it.
Well, then let her come here and say that, not some royal flunky.
Equerry.
The route has already been drawn up.
I have the alternative here. If we move the start so they line up in the grounds of Windsor Castle, in view of the nursery window, then, as planned, they continue east along the river towards the stadium at White City.
Fully 1 mile longer? Certainly not.
1 mile and 385 yards, to be precise. The finish is beneath the royal box.
26 miles and 385 yards in total?
That is correct.
Impossible. I've got absolutely, utterly impossible.
Men of Lacedaemonian Sparta, we beseech you to hasten to our aid. Do not allow our state, which is the most ancient in all Greece, to be enslaved by the barbarians. Eritrea is already taken, and Greece sorely weakened by her loss.
We would be delighted to help our Athenian brothers.
Oh, thank you, sir. We must leave straight away.
But sadly, it is impossible.
Impossible?
It is the ninth day of the first decade, Herald.
Yes, and what of it?
It is our established law that we cannot march out of Sparta on the ninth day. Indeed, we cannot march out until the moon is full.
But that's 5 days away. They're attacking us now, General. You must come to our help, or my brothers, my comrades in arms...
Impossible, Athenian. Simply impossible.
Impossible. Absolutely impossible. It hurts. It hurts. Why do they make already long race more longer?
Hello, my friend. You appear to be making a fool of yourself, not only at the Olympics, but in front of British royalty, too. Will you be finishing this race today, or shall we take a trip to the land where the race never ends?
Il diavolo!
No. I'm Pan. And will you please stop panicking?
I'm Dorando Pietri, Italian baker. If I die today, please let me go to hell of baking panaforte, not of running.
You're in the lead, my little petri dish. Just a few more steps. Clip-clop, clip-clop, tick-tock, tick-tock.
All right, Logan. Tortures. Someone must help this Pietri. Surely that will disqualify him. And in front of Her Royal Highness, the Princess of Wales.
Better than for him to die in front of her.
Come on, we must assist this poor Italian. We need an ambulance.
Ciao, ciao, loser.
Your Highness, the Italian baker was disqualified, as I feared. The officials couldn't resist helping him to cross the finish line, and so the American, Hayes, has been awarded gold. But nevertheless, the popular press are calling him the people's champion. It has therefore been suggested Your Highness might present him with this silver cup in recognition of his heroic effort.
What do I do now, Pan? I can't wait 5 days for these superstitious fitness freaks to come to our aid. Is this what you meant by your journey's just begun? Oh, it seems I have no choice but to run the 150 miles back to Marathon and deliver the news that our city must stand alone against the Persians.
The people's champion of the 1908 London Olympics, Dorando Pietri.
Congratulations, my little petri dish. But if you want to see a true people's champion, you should take a trip with me forward, to the 1950s, and meet my friend, John Tarrant.
Dear Mr. John Tarrant.
Dear Mr. Jack Crump,
I am writing to ask you...
The rules on this matter are clear.
...to ask you to reconsider my application to the AAA.
Please find enclosed a full reimbursement of your 5 shillings application fee.
Dear Mr. Jack Crump, the expenses I earned were less than my bus fare.
Tarrant, if the Amateur Boxing Association will reinstate you as an amateur, we will reconsider your application.
How can the ABA reinstate me if I was never a member in the first place?
An amateur is one who, since the age of 16, has never competed for a prize or monetary consideration in any sport or game.
Dear Mr. Crump, it is 1953, not 1880.
Or taught athletic exercise for pecuniary consideration, or in any way exploited his ability for profit.
I work in a limestone quarry. I work a 12-hour shift.
There is nothing more that my association can do under the circumstances.
And who has never taken part in any competition with anyone who is not an amateur.
If I'd known of these rules, I never would have accepted the measly 17 quid.
To break our agreement with the ABA would be a very serious matter.
I'm willing to take a punishment. A fine. A suspension.
The postal order to the value of 5 shillings is returned herewith.
This is a life sentence.
Nothing can be done.
My only crime is honesty.
Application has been denied.
Honesty.
Denied.
Honesty.
Denied.
Yours faithfully, John Tarrant.
As I had feared, the foolish boy Hippomenes is not quick. I can win without effort while he's challenging his lungs to a feat of willpower he has only in his mind and not his limbs. I hang back a moment. Meet his eyes to let him see the flint in my soul, and something happens. I can't describe a sense of loss of everything I am. Everything I have decided I will be suddenly disappears and is replaced by a vision of a life that will never again be solitary. No, that's not the life I want. I'm not made for selflessness, for loving another as much as myself. I am Atalanta, the greatest athlete of all. My body is designed not for love, but for winning. And win I shall.
Shouldn't love have given me winged feet like in the poems? The ability to skim over sand, to dance over a field of corn without bending the stalks? Not this clunk, clunk, clunk.
Damn you, Aphrodite. I asked for help and you magic me extra balls. I get it. Very funny. This may be your idea of an aphrodisiac, but they're holding me back. Some joker in the stands is about to get lucky. Bon voyage, my beauty!
What's that? A flash of gold in the corner of my eye. I stop. I stop still. It's gone by the stands. Who'd throw away such a pretty bauble? It could be solid gold. Well, I'm no magpie, but I'm not standing by. It'll just take a moment.
Atalanta stops. She stops dead still. She's looking at my golden ball, rolled away in the dust. And she's retrieving it. She's suddenly playing a game of fetch in the middle of a race that's a matter of my life or death. Women. Never understood them, and I never will. Oh, she's so swift, she's past me again. I'll throw another one.
It's Hippomenes. What's he playing at? The boy has golden balls.
Again? It works a charm. She stops, fetches, then overtakes. I thought she liked me, but by Zeus, she's competitive. Ah, I can't do this. This is lunacy.
There goes a third, catching the sun and winking. Ooh, but I can't risk it this time. If I lose this race, I lose myself.
Aphrodite, do something. I was wrong about the balls. Now I see the tactic. It's genius, but it's not quite working. I need one last favour. This race is killing me before it's over. Please, Aphrodite, you won't regret it.
Remember Apollo's prophecy and just run, Atalanta. Just run.
Aphrodite, please!
No, forget Apollo. I must have all three. Oh, I must hold them against my body like a child to my breast.
Yes, the speed is drained from her, and I've got a second wind. I can win this. Aphrodite, you're the best.
I run for the third ball and grasp it.
and the weight of them seems to double in my arms. And now I'm still running, but I'm struggling, cradling the weight of my fate.
Check me out, you bastards! I'm winning!
What have I done? Hippomenes has won.
A woman cannot run a marathon.
It's physically impossible.
The ovaries drop out.
A mile and a half's the limit.
It's unladylike.
If that girl were my daughter, I'd spank her.
No dame ever ran no marathon.
Hey, Tom, you remember what Arnie said when I told him I wanted to run?
No dame ever ran no marathon.
Jeez, that made me angry.
Then he said, if any woman can do it, that woman is you, right?
Right.
And here we are. Running the Boston Marathon, 1967. K.V. Switzer, number 261. My name in print. K.V. Switzer, like the best writers. J.D. Salinger, E.E. Cummings, T.S. Eliot. I pin the numbers on front and back, tie a ribbon in my hair like my heroine, Atalanta.
What?
You're wearing lipstick.
I'm gonna show them a girl can run a marathon and look good, too.
Do you think the officials have noticed you're a girl?
I dunno. I'm not hiding anything. And did you hear the other runners? They welcomed me.
I think this is the truck with the officials in it coming now.
Suddenly, behind me, I hear leather shoes. Not a runner. Too heavy. I turn, and the fiercest face I ever saw, bared teeth, coming at me.
Get in there, Maris! And give me those numbers!
Hey!
Oh, let me go!
Leave her alone!
Tom, shit!
Run! Run like hell!
Whoa!
Did you see? Perfect execution! Knocked him out in one! Bam! No one messes with my girl!
Who was that man?
Oh, wait a minute. Hell, I think that was Jock Semple. The director of the race.
Shit!
Oh, God.
We should go back. What if he's really hurt? We're gonna get arrested. Oh, God, the cameras. Did you see the cameras? The press caught the whole thing. We've gotta go back, Tom. We've gotta go back.
He's coming.
I'm trembling. Sick with fear. Why was I so pathetic? Why couldn't I be like Tom? Bam. Pow.
Oh, shit.
What?
I'll be kicked out of the AAU for this. What the hell do you think you were doing entering this race?
You know what this means to me.
I am never gonna make the Olympic team. It's all your fault. Besides, you run too slow anyway.
And now it's snowing, and I'm crying. I wish I could just disappear. I told Tom not to come. I told him. He cares about hammer throwing, his damned Olympic prospects, more than he cares about me. Snow just keeps on falling. Keeps falling soft, like it could make everything disappear. I suppose it's all over. I've got to finish this darn race now. I've got to. Just run, Kathy. Run and run.
Fidipides. 50 hours by sunrises and sunsets, straight running. I will join them right in the center of the battle. Standing in the center of the battlefield, my feet bloodied, but my heart Athenian to its core. On. On. On.
No! 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 No, please, not my feet! No! No!
Whoever challenges the King of Kings shall face the wrath of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, the 318 fathers of Nicaea.
This really is a surprise. The Ethiopian Abibe Bikila is racing barefoot.
The curse of Arius and perpetual damnation.
This really is a surprise. The Ethiopian Abibe Bikila is racing without feet.
I didn't shoot. No!
You are sentenced to hang. You don't need your feet anymore, runner. The lions are dead, Bikila. They are shot by the Emperor as they failed in their duty to protect the royal palace, as did you!
I deserve to die!
You and the traitor General Mengistu will hang side by side!
No!
Bikila, what have they done to you? Your feet. Let me see.
I will hang in the Mercado with the Teta Mengistu.
They will heal, I think. Keep them off the floor. You must try to avoid infection.
Tell my family. Tell them.
Listen to me, Abibi. We mustn't lose hope.
I didn't shoot the Rasas, Major. I would never hurt the royal family.
The royal family, the Rasas, they must know that you had no choice but to follow General Mengistu's orders.
But I failed in my duties to protect the palace. I deserve to die.
Shh, Abibi, listen. I have asked for a meeting with the Emperor. I will plead for you. The Emperor needs you, Abibi. You have become a mascot for this empire, for the people. When you won in Rome, you beat the colonialists and all the whites, and you gave him strength. The people celebrated, they chanted your name. They were proud to be Ethiopian. The Emperor can't risk losing the people's support. You will run in Tokyo, Abibi, I promise, and you will win.
Time to leave now, Major.
Now you listen to me, God. Leave his feet alone, you hear me?
Mengistu, he was my general. I had to follow orders, but I didn't understand. He used strange words. Tyranny, nepotism, oppression. He called me ignorant. He laughed at me. He called the Rasas the feudal aristocracy. He wanted us to shoot them in the royal palace. But I didn't. I didn't shoot. Stand up! Quickly!
You are lucky, runner.
I don't understand.
The Emperor has pardoned you.
I'm sorry? I don't understand.
It is simple, Corporal Bikila. Now you will have to run even faster.
The committee would like to emphasise that under no circumstances will Mr. John Tarrant of Buxton be permitted to run the 1956 Liverpool Marathon.
I reckon motorbike is going to be the quickest, John.
Aye.
And cheaper. And better to navigate the route.
Right.
You'll have to change behind a tree, then put your coat and cap over the top. You can jump out of the bushes and join them once the gun has gone off. And I'll be there along the way on the bike, ready to mow down any outraged Trilby heads.
Go! Who's that man with an hood?
He appeared from the bushes.
He's not wearing a number.
Look at the dirty old plimsolls all over.
He's here! It's John Tarrant!
It's the ghost that runner!
Stop them, man!
Run, yeah. Tarrant, run!
I'm gonna get you, Tarrant.
Leave my brother alone!
Hey! You could have killed me!
Thanks, Victor.
I'll tell you what, he's given her a run for their money.
I can see the headlines already.
Odd man out leads the field.
The working man, out in front.
Gatecrasher leads.
A runner with a heart as tough as the rocks he carves in the quarry.
Mystery runner owns up.
I'm John Tarrant, running without a number. Not counted. May as well not exist. But I'll show them. If I win, the AAA will have to listen. Until then, I'm John Tarrant of Buxton, a ghost runner.
There's no doubt about John's amateur spirit.
There are many top-class athletes competing who are not amateurs.
Laced with hypocrisy.
The upper classes made the rules.
Totally corrupt.
Shamanism.